I last saw my father in August 1977. He was 61 years old, 61 and a half, to be precise. Born on the 10th of February 1916. We'd arranged to meet at the bookshop on Waterloo Station.
Hello, Tommy.
Ah, Julia! The marriage of heaven and hell, and in paperback. Oh. I've been here for ages, arrived early.
Are you buying that book, sir?
Of course, that's why I'm writing my name in it.
Are you okay? You look a bit pale.
I've only got a £10 note. Never been better. No booze in my system, darling. Not a drop, I swear. Just black coffee, gallons of the stuff to keep me going. Sleep has become nothing but a superfluous bore. I really don't need it, not anymore. No time, too much to do. A rather miraculous change has taken place. And as a result, I'm really looking forward to dying.
Your change, sir.
My change will come when I have shuffled off the weight of this body. Do you believe in the afterlife, madam? Or do we just rot?
Come on, Tommy. We need to go. Don't be ridiculous.
Ridiculous? Why ridiculous? I'm looking forward to dying. I'm just speaking the truth, and there's nothing better than the truth, is there? I've lost the fear, you see, so I'm ready to go. The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned.
My father had been busy with death for as long as I could remember. He was always talking about it, even to complete strangers. He believed that death is what life is all about.
Of course, Blake said that the body is that part of the soul discerned by the five senses. And it's only now that I properly begin to understand him. I'll just be stepping out of my body, that's all. Come on, let's have lunch. I could eat a horse.
I've not come across anybody who could be so excessive in their habits as my father. 8 cups of black coffee for breakfast, and then more coffee throughout the day. That's when he was off the booze.
3 cups of black coffee, please, and a ham sandwich. I brought a new poem, wrote it last night.
Oh, good. When he was on the booze, he didn't much care what he drank, just so long as it was alcoholic. There was a visit to a neighbour. It was around midday. My father took hold of a pint beer mug and helped himself to sherry, wine, whiskey and beer. He stirred the concoction with his index finger and smiled at his host, a rather serious-minded Marxist historian, and said, "Bottoms up," as he downed the lot in one gulp.
I'll read you the final verse.
Lovely.
It's rather good. Or at least I thought it was good when I looked at it at 4 o'clock this morning. Far still from the heart's centre, but with less storm, less crying, I wait for birth again. Now dying has opened its door and let me enter.
How can I ever begin to explain the muddle of such a parent? He was impossible in so many ways, often drunk, sometimes violent, addicted to all sorts of pills, profoundly self-centred in his pursuit of his poetic art. And yet, there was a kind of honesty about him, and I never doubted his love for me.
I was thinking, perhaps he wouldn't mind putting those last 2 lines on my tombstone. I mean, you or Peggy or whoever does that business for me. Hope I'm at the cottage in Wales when I go. Then I can have a good thick slab of slate and a view of the mountains. I wonder if there are mountains in heaven. I feel there must be. Great waves of them stretching out into infinity.
Mm-hmm. My father never hit me, except once when the three of us were sitting down to Sunday lunch at the big round table and he had lunged sideways at my mother with his fist but got me instead by mistake. "So sorry, darling," he said, genuinely apologetic. "No blood, I hope."
My one regret is that I won't have the chance of meeting my grandchildren. Oh, well, can't have everything.
Your grandchildren?
Yes.
Where'd you get that idea? I must have been indirectly thinking about children, though, because I'd had a dream in which I saw tiny babies sitting in teacups, like the elegant mice in that Beatrix Potter story, The Tailor of Gloucester. And my father was right. They were already on their way, in a way. My daughter was born almost exactly a year after that meeting at Waterloo Station, and then came my son a few years later.
2 would be best, I'd say. I always thought you'd have benefited from a sibling.
Hmm.
Personally, I dreaded the prospect of parenthood. But then, there you were, a being from another planet, staring at me with big dark eyes. I wonder what sort of people your children will be.
During those first delicate weeks of Daniel's life, I remember gazing at his wise and solemn face and wondering what sort of genetic luggage he'd brought with him and how he would make use of it.
I can't have been an easy father for you, darling. I'm amazed at my own callousness looking back. I would follow any experience that seemed to foster a poem. Still, I hope you will speak well of me to them.
I'll do my best.
But have I spoken well of him over the years? Or have I been rather casual, telling my children stories of drunken excess and bad behaviour that make them laugh with disbelief, but not really trying to bring them closer to the man who was their grandfather?
And remember to respect your marriage vows. One thing marriage can't stand is divorce. I've learned that several times to my cost. Emotional cost, I mean. At least I have found tranquility with Peggy. Oh, delicious coffee. What are you drinking, gin?
Maybe I'll never get married.
Your mother and I loved you, but we did not properly love each other. You may well regard marriage as a kind of trap.
And this is fizzy water. You put it on the tray for me.
Went right off gin after the last bout. At least the hospital cured me of that particular addiction. What's the time? 2 o'clock already. Must be off. I've been thinking about Mary Magdalene recently. She was the first person to see the risen body of Christ, and I bet she could tell us a thing or two.
Shall I take you to your train, or do you think you can manage on your own?
When did I first take on this mother hen role with him? Very early on, probably. I seemed to see myself tutting and telling him to wear a scarf and not be late home before I'd even taken on the challenge of the 11 plus.
I'm fine, really I am. Thank you. Peggy and I leave for Wales first thing in the morning. I'll phone you when we're at the cottage. Can't wait to see the dawn spreading out across the fields. Look after yourself, darling. I'm sure you will. Don't forget what I said about my grandchildren.
Mm. Oh, look, that's my bus. I'll have to run. Bye then.
Bye. Off she goes, my only child. Got the first few lines of a poem. You are what you are. And for my part, touch my mind. Rinse my heart with healing water. Oh, well, that's a start. I'll get back to it later.
And now I'm 62, and it seems an extraordinary age to have reached because I'm older than my father ever became. And Daniel is the age I was then.
Mum, I can't talk long. My battery's almost out. It's been great. I made the wooden stage, painted it blue, and it's got the hinges down the middle so I can carry it under my arm like a weird briefcase. Hannah and I had done all those rehearsals in the park. It was like a funny test, the two of us working so close together on a tiny rug. And we did the first show today, and people loved it. But what I really wanted to tell you is we're getting married. There's a music festival on here, and it feels as if everyone is celebrating with us.
And now I'm doing that mother henness with my son and his lovely bride-to-be. Worrying, but about what? It's my fears, not theirs, and that's for sure. They're much more grown up in their marriage plans and vows than I ever was in mine.
$153.
Does that include you and me?
$155. Will they all fit?
The population of Europe can fit on the Isle of Wight. Or at least they could a few years ago.
Did the confirmation come through for the theatre?
They want us for a whole week.
Wow!
It was the online reviews that did it. The Folding Stage Company proudly presents... Hello?
How's it going? Your plan's taking shape.
I was 7 months pregnant when I got married. I put on a red dress and John and I bumbled off to the registry of births, marriages and deaths at the Elephant and Castle. Do you? Yes, I do. And then we went to the pub and invited everyone we knew there to come to the most casual of parties. Smoked mackerel and a few bottles of wine and lots of reggae music. I remember dancing, me and my big round belly. Not a single member of either of our families was present.
Great.
You know what, Daniel, I keep thinking about my father. He'd have loved to come to such a celebration. I can just see him wearing his white linen suit. Although the suit hardly fitted him anymore. It was the pills that did it, side effects.
We're going to invite the living mum? There's no room for the long ago dead.
He was never really bothered by the separation between the living and the dead. At least towards the end he wasn't. He wrote a lot about that.
Poem for my daughter Julia. Why should I say that you are not here? Are you not always present with us, almost sitting opposite me in that chair? Certainly I talk more to you in your absence than with most people with whom I share a presence. And I should be grateful to you for such silent saying. It shows the rapport with those who have left us by dying.
Pass me the blue. Did you know your grandfather?
He died ages ago. I sometimes feel close to him, though, as if I understand what made him tick. I suppose it's from reading the poems.
Your mum told me that when she was little, she used to think a wicked magician had put a spell on him, and she wished she knew how to undo the spell.
Did she? She never told me that. I'd like to do a play about him, but not sure quite how. What about oranges?
What about oranges?
In a big bowl, and teacups hanging from the branches of the old tree by the entrance, and night lights to mark the way in.
Sounds like a set for A Midsummer Night's Dream.
More, Mum?
Hello?
What about the Song of Solomon?
Song of who?
Solomon. He of the wisdom and the temple and the Queen of Sheba.
Oh, I know him. My beloved is like a gazelle, like a young stag, like a little fox among the vines.
Yes, it was a bit about comfort me with apples that I liked so much. I used to imagine myself sitting in a bath with comforting apples all around me instead of bath water.
Comfort me with oranges?
No, apples. I'll find it for you. I've got my father's Bible somewhere. He'd probably mark the best passages in Blue Biro.
I sometimes imagine all the words my father taught me rattling around inside my head like in a tumble dryer. So many lovely poems. Dylan Thomas and Yeats and Auden. The crowds upon the pavement were fields of harvest wheat. And down by the old embankment...
I heard a lover sing under the arch of the railway. Love has no ending.
And also some very odd choices to teach a child. Queen Jezebel, who plucked the clothes from her shoulder bones down to her spent tits. And the Congo, for which you need to beat upon a table with the handle of a broom.
Hard as you are able. Boom, boom, boom.
I'm not doing this right. Mother of the groom-to-be harping on the dead. And here are Daniel and Hannah, busy with thoughts of flowers and oranges and guests and the new play that they're doing, and all I seem to offer is stories about my father, who was obsessed with the idea of dying, and who did die ages ago in a little cottage in Wales. He arrived there on August the 9th, 1977, the day after I'd met him at the station.
So nice to be here again. Drive wasn't too bad. Not that I did any driving, just slumped in the back seat, ate too many peppermints and dozed on and off. Until we entered the valley. Then I woke up all right. Beautiful. What's this I'm sitting on? Oh, my old friend Dylan didn't know I had him here. Corner of the page turned down on... Oh, Fern Hill and the bit about the horses. Lovely. Oh, I wish I hadn't underlined it. Rather spoils a first edition. A signed copy, too. So it must have been after the birth of the simple light in the first spinning place, the spellbound horses walking warm out of the whinnying green stable onto the field of praise.
Thomas, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're talking to yourself again. I wish you'd come to bed. You must stop rattling around like this night after night. It's driving me mad.
I need to talk, Peggy. There's so much unsaid.
What? I can't hear you.
I said I need to talk. It's the only way I can follow my thoughts. I'll try to keep my voice down.
And no more coffee.
It's the rhythm that does it. The spellbound horses walking warm. And you can see them, bodies steaming, muscles rippling, and the world newly made. Everything on the edge of its own beginning. A song to a paradise lost, and to his own lost youth, when the old soak was still green and golden and happy as the day was long. Happy. What an odd word. Mountains do it, of course. They delight. At least they did before I broke that bloody rib 6 months ago. No more rock climbing for you, Mr. Blackburn. That smug idiot of a doctor. As if he was referring to a particularly nasty vice. Still, the eyes work well enough, and from here I can see the mountains and think myself into them. Or I will be able to once the dawn has broken. Where was I?
Hannah, do you realise that your name works both ways? Forwards and backwards?
Great. I'll put it on my CV. These poems of your grandfather's, the last ones, they're nice. Or at least I like some of them.
Do you? My jury's still out. What about leaving the hall to Bob Marley? Every little ting is going to be all right.
Don't worry, yeah. We could finish with that, couldn't we? Walking out into the future, arm in arm, man and wife. I found the material for my dress, by the way. In the market, next to the man with the oranges. Red. Because my love is like a red, red rose. Stretchy cotton. Can I see your suit?
Behold, the cutting edge of fashion. He wore dark blue velvet. 20 quid from Help the Aged. Fits like a glove.
Or like a suit.
You know, I've never been to the cottage my grandfather rented in Wales. It's at the end of a valley, looking out on the mountains.
You've never been there? How odd.
I suppose Mum didn't want to go back. And I never thought about it until now.
Never mind what Peggy says. Strong black coffee is just what's needed now that a bottle of gin is clearly not what's needed. According to her, I was on 2 bottles a day, and she's usually right in such matters. Knows how to keep count when it counts. Gulping the stuff down onto an empty stomach on my way back from the off-licence, with a sense of sizzling like a fried egg on a piece of hot metal. Nice metaphor. Must write it down. Two spoonfuls. Make it 3. That should do the trick. Dawn shakes out the light from the blackness. I do not know whether last night I slept or did not sleep. I certainly spent a long time courting the silence while the ideas teeming around kept me awake. Not quite right yet. I'll get back to it later. Glad to have seen Julia. Funny, tortuous girl can't quite shake off the burden of her childhood. But she's managing, doing okay. Her birthday. Tomorrow or day after. What day or night is it now? That would be a first clue. Mustn't forget to send a cheque. Have forgotten so far means it will arrive a bit late. Never mind. Cigarettes. Matches. Pills. What's this? Oh, the phone number for that nice shrink in London. Where the hell have I put my checkbook?
Do you want some?
He made such fast switches. One minute he was very wise and as soft as a puppy, and then the next he was completely mad, shouting and roaring and smashing things and insulting total strangers. Yeah, lovely.
Maybe he should have used that wildness on the stage and he could have kept sane in the process.
Buttery fingers. Oh. Let me do it.
He looks like an actor in that one. Is that him, too? He's a different person in every photo.
I wonder what I've inherited from him. If I've got his bushy eyebrows and lanky body, has some of that other stuff bounced down through the generations and landed on my shoulders?
Well, you can keep the shouting and roaring and broken promises for the stage and all your niceness for me.
Oh, here's that checkbook. Slip down behind the cushion next to poor old Dylan Thomas. Not that poetry and money are natural bedfellows, although I suppose he made quite a packet post-mortem after that catastrophic end in New York. I've never made enough to feed a church mouse. Even the autobiography only sold, what, 1,000 copies? I blame that on the ghastly cover, abstract but rather brutally sexual. My editor said it was just right for the market, so I told him he was a stupid and ignorant sod. He didn't like it, not one bit. What's the date? We arrived on the 9th. It must be the early hours of the 10th. No, the 11th? I've been awake so long, it's hard to keep track. How old is she going to be? Well, if I'm 61, she must be 29. Pay. Julia Blackburn. The sum of £30? That sounds about right. Grandchildren any day now.
I never thought I'd see the day. Mum has sent us an attachment.
An emotional attachment?
Possibly. Oh, look, Hannah. It's a photo of a cheque, August 11, 1977, made out to her and signed Thomas Blackburn. £30 only, and a long, wobbly line.
What shaky handwriting. As if he was sitting on a fast train. Is there a message?
Rather oblique. I thought I'd lost it, but it was at the back of the drawer all along.
Why has she sent you this? Why didn't she cash it?
I suppose she couldn't. Must have been too late when it arrived.
But I kept it, didn't I? For all the years, through all my moving from one house to the next, I kept a battered old cheque as a memento of the day when I received it.
At last, the dawn, and with it the sweet circling of seagulls in the field outside my window, as if they come through the cleansed daylight from the sea's kingdom. Ah, rooks and magpies. New poems coming thick and fast. Don't believe I've ever written so many in such a short space of time. I've been telling everyone about my grandchildren. They are as pleased as I am with the news. Must congratulate Julia when the morning is more established. The rib should allow me to walk to the call box with a pocket full of pennies. Ring a ring a roses, a pocket full of posies. A tissue, a tissue, we all fall down.
For God's sake, Thomas, what's going on down there?
Just about to make a fresh pot of coffee, my love. I'll bring you a cup. The dawn is quite spectacular, not to be missed.
Anna.
What? Ah. It's the middle of the night.
I couldn't sleep. I couldn't stop thinking about Tommy. I think Mum's right. I want to visit the place that remembers him best, so I can begin to remember him as well.
How?
By going to his cottage.
I suppose we could go for the weekend.
A practice honeymoon.
You can practice comforting me with apples.
The pub's called The Ring,
I think the man who owns the pub owns the cottage, or he used to. Yes, here's the number. I put it under W for Wales. Give it a try, you never know.
I wonder how the cottage has changed. I expect they brought the outside lavatory inside. It was no fun making that visit in a rainstorm. Roof repaired. He could never afford it. A new lick of paint on the windows and doors. The sludgy green was horrible. Jenny from next door must be long since gone. But some things don't change, do they? The little stream singing its urgent song. The descendants of his rooks and seagulls and dancing magpies still busy in the field. The mountains. I planted a bush of rosemary on his grave. I must remember to ask Daniel and Hannah to see if it's still there.
So, here we are at the poet's mountain home.
Key to be collected from the man in number one. I hope he's in. They're all so cramped together. Like a bit of a street in an inner city slum in the middle of nowhere.
Built for the slate miners, I suppose. And the bosses didn't want them to be too comfortable. Oh, but at least this nowhere is lovelier than anywhere I've seen for a long while.
Ah, hello. Oh, you were here for the cottage.
That's right. Just for the weekend. My name is Daniel and this is Hannah, my...
I'm his almost wife.
So, you made it in good time then. That's good. Right. I'd better show you around. It's pretty basic, but comfortable. You know, I hope you don't think I'm nosy, but you remind me of someone. Is this your first time in the valley?
My grandfather used to rent this cottage ages ago. I always wanted to see the place, but... His name was Thomas. Thomas Blackburn.
Well, is that so? And I saw him in you straight away. I knew him, you see.
I never met him. He died before I was born.
I was a young boy then, of course I was, and very shy. A bit troubled, too, after my own father died. Your grandfather was very kind to me. Schoolmaster, you might say. He was good with children, he was. And with dogs. Oh, dogs loved him. He took me out walking in the mountains. His dog, Henry, jolly little chap, came too. He'd recite poetry as we walked. All sorts of poems. Oh, you wouldn't believe. He had a beautiful voice. Like one of the bards of the Eisteddfod. You know, we were talking about him in the pub just the other day. His poems live on in the valley, so he's not forgotten. There's the lines from a poem on his grave. It's in Welsh as well as English. Oh, nice touch.
The 12th, Julia's birthday. It's 10 o'clock now, and though I worked through 3/4 of the night and then sat in this chair until the dawn broke, I feel no tiredness. Peggy is bitterly cross about my unslept bed. As the dawn spread out across the field, a single magpie lighted on a fence 2 or 3 yards from my typewriter. And I thought, one for sorrow, and pulled my forelock. But another came, and it was joy. And the two of them brisking about in the rinsed light, all gold and glory.
There are 2 bedrooms up here, Daniel, but I sort of feel at home in this one. Come and have a look. It's got a wonderful view of the mountains.
I used to watch the mountains from his bed, so this must have been his room.
Well, it's ours now, for a little while.
All that rage and chaos of his. Do you think it's in me too? A locked box of trouble.
I'm not worried about a thing. Well, I've looked everywhere and I haven't seen a locked box. Let's go to bed and we can stare at the mountains together.
How could I refuse such an offer?
I always felt that with the next drink I would see God. but it was never true. What I got was a hangover, a melancholia that was incomparably sad, and then drink again the ruinations to cover. It is time I came to terms with my sorrow. So good night, grief, and good morning, tomorrow.
What time is it? 4? 5? I've lost track. Can't put the light on. Might disturb Hannah. It's as if I've been drinking too much coffee, but we didn't have coffee last night.
No moon, and the night is so dark, but I can sense the presence of the mountains, my guardian angels. There is no difference between keeping my eyes shut or keeping them open, and yet when they are open, I seem to see into the depth of the darkness.
Downstairs, to sit in the dark and wait for the dawn. My grandfather sat here, where I am sitting now. If not in this chair, then in one very like it. A close relative, you might say. He sat here, night after night, waiting for the dawn.
The moment when light pours over the rim of the mountains like an overflowing bathtub.
Amazing how he just went for it. Wasn't afraid of going all out. His head spinning, and all the time he kept writing, keeping a record of the intensity of each new moment as he entered it.
I have been thinking how strange and unnatural breathing is. I mean, having to draw air in and out from cradle to grave. Then if you have a cold, having to do it through the mouth. It will be good after death to dispense with the process which interferes with thoughts and feeling.
That's the window that he looked out through. I can see the green expanse of the field stretching out towards the steep outline of Knecht. Nice word. Moylan Moor is on the other flank of the valley, but it's hidden from here.
They are the Eternals. Dear Julia, I can't sleep and I want to talk to you. I have been brooding over the mountains behind the cottage and they have been talking back to me as if they were metaphors for our immortality. Do you think the dead have a concern for those they did love? And do you think that they can somehow communicate that love with a dream or a sudden increasing of awareness? I'd like to think that they can, and that it's an aspect of what we call grace. But like all important questions, it is unanswerable until our dying.
On the evening of my birthday, my father went down to the village to post his letter to me. When he got back, he read Peggy a new poem called Morituri. It was the second time he'd read it to her, but he seemed to have forgotten that she'd heard it already. He told her he planned to work through the night again, but she was not to worry. He settled down in the armchair facing the window and began to write.
Ha! The birds are starting up. The first sound of the new day. I think I can picture it. I think I can picture him here and the strange and exhilarating excitement he was feeling.
My father went on for page after page in his notebook. At times his handwriting was so tangled and strange it was impossible to decipher the words. And then he reached the final sentence.
Now, after hours of strange travel from dawn to dawn, though the mind still burns, I must go upstairs and lie in a horizontal position and breathe long and deep. Good night.
Peggy was sleeping in the smaller of the two bedrooms. She told me she was sleeping very lightly because she was so aware of him being awake in the downstairs room, drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, talking out loud as if he and himself were two different people having a conversation, and writing, writing endlessly in a series of notebooks. She heard him coming up the stairs, and then she heard him climbing into bed.
And if I went out into the early morning light and followed that path that crosses the fields, then I would be stepping in his footsteps, in a landscape that is his own familiar place. The air is so fresh and sharp. A lot of low-lying mist everywhere. Maybe if someone were to see me now, they'd recognise the shape of my grandfather, my gangly body like his gangly body. So, off we go, old man, you and me, through the ghost of gulls and towards the summit of Knicht.
On the morning of my father's death, the morning after my birthday, I woke up early. The sun was shining through the grimy industrial windows of the warehouse where we were living, suffusing that big, dusty space with a shimmering grey light. For no particular reason, I felt light-headed and incredibly happy. Music was playing and John and I were dancing when the phone rang. Peggy told me how she heard him cry out and so she went into his room. She said she could see by the early morning light that he was dead. She told me that she lit a candle and covered him with an Indian rug and sat with him for some time, not wanting to disturb the next-door neighbours before they were awake.
Following the thin paths that my grandfather used to follow. Trust in coincidences, Hannah would say. A rowan tree, its roots gripping the grey granite of a boulder. Lichen like damp stains on the rock. The tree will be heavy with berries in the autumn, as red as any blood. He wrote a poem about a rowan. Maybe it was this one. I can feel the mountains leaning down on my shoulders.
I went up to Wales by train, not reading, not even thinking, just covering the long distance that separated one place from another. Someone had arranged for a taxi to collect me from the station, and I arrived at the cottage in the evening. There was Peggy, standing on her own in the front room. She looked very tiny and tired, and when I embraced her, it was like putting my arms around a bundle of thin branches. Her voice came from far away, and she kept saying, I'm sorry, as if my father's death was something she could have forestalled.
Look, the sun is coming over the topmost ridge, and it's pushing back the early morning mist.
Breaking it into floating tatters.
I started to go climbing before I knew it was one of his passions. So is that genetic? Rocks in the blood? Climbing is just like walking, but with smaller steps. Keeping your body upright, free from the rock face whenever possible. It's all a question of trust. And as your fingers ache and your feet have nothing to hold them steady but the tiniest rub of friction, then you move on. And in the act of moving, you keep your balance.
Whoa. Hey. Here.
Fat and broad Welsh cobs. Good for steep slopes, breath steaming.
Muscles rippling.
Must get back. Hannah will have woken by now.
I remember his funeral. A little track led to the cemetery gate. The sun was shining and the air was clear and bright, so that a seemingly endless succession of mountains were exposed to view, and far away down the valley and across the plain, there was the misty sea, almost indistinguishable from the sky. The poet, R.S. Thomas, had come to officiate at the ceremony. He stood in his priest's robes on the steep grass slope and read the passage from the Book of Common Prayer. Man that is born of woman hath but a short time to live. And his voice was beautiful in the sunshine.
You're up early. I slept so deep I didn't notice you leaving the bed.
Oh, you look lovely. All tousled.
I only woke up because the man next door came round. He brought a bag filled with your grandfather's climbing books. He said your husband must have these,
And for a moment, I wondered who he was talking about.
A present from my grandfather.
My father. I know those books. He used Blue Biro to mark all of his climbs, along with the date when he did them and who was climbing with him. Wonderful names. Cwm Idwal, Rhyb Athysgil, Bochlwyd, the Lake of Creega Aderyn.
Oh, before I forget, the voice of my beloved. Look, he comes, leaping upon the mountains, bounding over the hills. I've been reading the Song of Solomon. I think I found the verses that we can do together at the wedding. Question and answer across the circle. Listen, I start. Oh, my dove, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your face is lovely.
I last saw my father in August 1977. He was 61 years old, 61 and a half to be precise.
My beloved is mine and I am his. He pastures his flocks among the lilies until the day breathes and the shadows flee. Turn, my beloved, be like a gazelle, like a young stag on the cleft of mountains.
And now my son is the age I was then.
Set me as a seal upon your heart, as a seal upon your arm, for love is strong as death.
For love is as strong as death, passion as fierce as the grave. Its flashes are flashes of fire, a raging flame.
Many waters cannot quench love.
And neither can floods drown it.